Parshas Tetzaveh. In the opening pasuk in this week's parsha, Va'atos Tetzaveh B'nei Yisrael, V'yikcho Elecho Shemen Zayis Zoch. Klal Yisrael are instructed by Moshe Rabbeinu to take Shemen Zayis Zoch, pure olive oil, for the purpose of lighting the menorah in the Mishkan. There is a Medrash Rabbah, on that opening pasuk, and the Medrash says as follows. The Medrash quotes the pasuk that compares Klal Yisrael to the Zayis, the olive. And that's why, of course, the Medrash is brought on this pasuk. Klal Yisrael compared to many different types of fruits and animals and species, but here specifically, it's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, they are compared to the Zayis. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, Perek Yud Aleph. Zayis Ra'ano. So the Medrash asks the question, in what way are Klal Yisrael comparable to an olive? In what way are they olive-like? So the Medrash says, the olive is plucked from the tree, and then v'nechbat, it is beaten, pulverized. And that's ultimately how you produce the shemen from the olive. It has to be nitchan, it has to be ground and crushed, and then the shemen is produced. So the Medrash says, so too Klal Yisrael are also crushed and persecuted by the oivdei kechovim, by the goyim, and in that way we are comparable to the Zayis, because the Zayis is crushed, and that produces the shemen, that produces the goods. So to Klal Yisrael are crushed and tortured and persecuted by the goyim, and that way they're chayzer b'tshuva and they come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Interesting reference to Zayis. Says the Medrash that actually there's an alternative explanation. What's unique about Zayis, or specifically shemen which emerges from the Zayis, is, as we know, you can pour shemen together with other liquids, they won't mix. They don't mix. Says the Medrash, so too Klal Yisrael don't mix with the goyim. And then thirdly, in similar vein, the Medrash says that when you do pour water together with shemen, you know for certain that the shemen not only won't mix, but actually will rise to the top. So too says the Medrash, the Klal Yisrael, when they are performing Ritzonei Shel Mokoim, which means they're towing the line, they're being Shema Torah or Mitzvahs, Nitzavim L'Ma'alo, they rise to the top, Min Oivdei Kechovim, above the Goyim. That's the end of the Medrash. So the Medrash over here has drawn three comparisons between the Zayis, or the Shemen, and Klal Yisrael. Firstly, the Zayis produces its shemen by being crushed and ground and pulverized. Klal Yisrael is the same. They are also crushed by the goyim, and in that way they are chayzer b'tshuva. Secondly, shemen does not mix with other liquids, neither does Klal Yisrael absorb and mix with other nations. And thirdly, shemen always rises to the top. So to Klal Yisrael, not only do they not mix with the goyim, but they rise to the top. So I think it's possible perhaps to suggest that actually all of these mesholim, all of these three references, the comparison between the Zayis and the Shemen and Klal Yisrael, are in fact one. There's really one theme that is running through all of these three mesholim. And this is based on a Beis HaLevi, which we have mentioned many, many, many times. This Beis HaLevi is to be found in the beginning of Parshas Shemos. We won't review the entire Beis HaLevi because we have mentioned it in the past, but it really, I think, is worthy of mentioning it again and again because of its profound importance. The Beis HaLevi, there in the beginning of Parshas Shemos, discusses how it was that Golus in Mitzrayim all began. How did the story begin? And the Beis HaLevi begins by posing the following question. If you would open a Tehillim to Perek Kuf Hey, 105. The opening pasuk in that perek is Hoidu Lashem Kiru Bishmoy. Hoidu Lashem, we thank Hashem, we will declare His name. Now, how would you expect a perek like that to continue? So obviously it's going to be full of all the tremendous chasodim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has performed for us, and all the miracles, which are all worthy, obviously, of thanking Him. And indeed, the perek of Tehillim does continue that way. All of a sudden, there's a very strange pasuk, and this is what the Beis HaLevi is bothered by. Because the pasuk there says, in the middle of that perek, Hofach Libo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu switched their hearts, Lisnoi es Amoi, to hate His nation. Whose heart? The Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu switched the heart of the Mitzrayim to hate His nation, to hate Klal Yisrael. Which is, of course, referring to Parashas Shemot, Va'era, Boy, B'Shalach, Golos Mitzrayim. The obvious question being, and this is what the Beis HaLevi asks, why is that in the perek that is introduced by, we thank Hashem? We thank Hashem for the fact that the Goyim hated us. We thank Hashem for the fact that we left Mitzrayim, that I understand. We thank Hashem for the Eser Makos and the Kriyas Yamsov, I understand. But we thank Hashem for the fact that the Mitzrayim hated us. That's worthy of thanks. So here comes the Beis HaLevi's big Yisrael, and as I say, we've mentioned it many times. The Beis HaLevi says, do you know how Golos Mitzrayim all began? It all began, but brings the Medrash to back himself up. The Medrash says that Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim were Moishech Orlosom. Moishech Orlosom, the Beis HaLevi explains and proves, means that they covered up their Bris Mila. They did not annul the Bris Mila. They were still Mekayim the Mitzvah. In other words, they didn't undo it. Rather, they concealed it. Says the Beis HaLevi, do you know what's happening over here? Klal Yisrael are thinking to themselves, you know, we're guests. In Mitzrayim, we don't really belong here. So therefore, we don't want to stand out. Because we don't own the place, the Mitzrayim do. And isn't the correct mode of behavior when you're in Golos to assimilate with your hosts? So we don't want to look different. Bris Mila is, of course, the whole concept of Bris Mila is precisely for that very reason, to look different to the Goyim so they concealed it. So we all look the same now. Says the Beis HaLevi, this is our story and has always been our story. The story of Golos in the history of Klal Yisrael, or specifically the story of anti-Semitism. Many books have been written and theories have been proposed. Why Klal Yisrael? Why have they been the nation that have been subject to more torture and torment than any other nation in the history of civilization? I think there's a book, I've mentioned this book as well, called Why the Jews? But the Beis HaLevi explains for us why the Jews. He says because when Klal Yisrael cover up their Bris Mila, which figuratively means they want to look like their host nation, the Goyim. They want to assimilate, they want to be absorbed into the non-Jewish nation, then they're running an enormous risk. What is that risk? That eventually they will indeed assimilate and then disappear off the face of the planet. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes, and Paris says to his nation, five ifs. Have you ever noticed this? Five ifs. Klal Yisrael calls his advisors and says, what happens if a foreign nation decides to wage war against us? Totally absurd. Mitzrayim at the time was the world's superpower, economically, militarily, financially, socially. Nobody in the world would have started up with them. That's the first if. What happens if a nation begins waging war against us? Absurd as that may seem, Pari wasn't done. He says, and what happens if Klal Yisrael would join the enemy? Why not should they do that? And what happens if they end up victorious? What are the chances of any nation being victorious over Mitzrayim? And what happens if Klal Yisrael drive us out of our own state? That's our pretext, right? Hold on, this Hakvaloi, we're going to enslave. Does that make any sense? If we'll be engaged in war, and if a foreign nation comes to fight against us, and if Klal Yisrael will join with them, and if they'll fight against us, and if they'll drive us out of the land, so they'll be victorious, if, totally irrational, says the Beis Halevi, you're right, it is irrational. Hofach Libon, Kadosh Baruch Hu switched their hearts. This was all orchestrated by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Do you know why? As an enormous chesed to Klal Yisrael. This ultimately saves Klal Yisrael. In other words, if we really pose the question, why the Jews? The real answer, in the opinion of the Beis Halevi, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whenever he sees that Klal Yisrael are too comfortable in Golos and are beginning to adopt more and more the culture of their host nation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I have to intervene over here. And I have to plant an irrational hatred in the hearts of the Goyim so that they will hate Klal Yisrael, and that will be their stark reminder that you are in fact different to your host. Don't cover up your bris milah. Don't cover up the bris milah. And that, says the Beis Halevi, is why in the Perek of Tehillim, which begins with the words Hoyudu Hashem, we thank Hashem, and what do we find right there in the middle? Hofach libom lisnoi es ame. We thank, yes, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that Klal Yisrael was so hated and tortured by Mitzrayim, because had they not been, then we wouldn't be here today. Klal Yisrael wouldn't exist. This has always been the story of our Golos. Every period of persecution has always followed a period of tremendous success and flourishing. The Spanish expulsion in 1492 followed what? The period called the Golden Age of Spanish Jewry. The Golden Age of Spanish Jewry is too scary to think about, because that's immediately followed up by the expulsion. If it really is a golden age and you feel very comfortable over here, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in. And he plants this illogical, irrational hatred in the hearts of the Goyim to expel or to torture or to persecute or to torment Klal Yisrael, and that ultimately is their preservation. I heard, and I think it's now become famous, I heard this on one of his shiurim from Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. But he's now written a book, or at least the book has now been produced based on those shiurim, and the book is called Divine Madness. And I heard these shiurim, and Rabbi Avigdor Miller, in his own inimitable fashion, was never scared to mince his words. Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, you know, sometimes we hear and we read about the shtetl. The wonderful shtetl, what was it like in the shtetl in pre-war Europe? And we get the erroneous impression that there was some sort of idyllic, utopian existence. Everything was just fine and dandy. In this shtetl, you had the rov, and you had the kehillah, and you had the water carrier, and you had the tree cutter, and everything was just fine and dandy. Says Rav Avigdor Miller, I heard this saying, he was saying this on one of his shiurim, he says, don't believe it, I was there. I was there. Rav Avigdor Miller learned in Slobodka Yeshiva in pre-war Europe. He said, I was there. It wasn't so idyllic at all. The reform movement and the Haskalah, which was still being, the effects were still being felt, were ravaging through Europe. Klal Yisrael were being lost, and you could have switched the lights out very soon in Europe. Thousands and thousands and thousands were lost spiritually to all the different movements, whether it be secular Zionism or the reform movement, Klal Yisrael being swallowed alive. So he says, don't believe it, I was there. The Holocaust, for all its tragic, tragic repercussions, ultimately preserved and saved Klal Yisrael. And that's what he means in the title of his book, Divine Madness. It might look madness to us. It doesn't make any sense. You read about the Klal Yisrael in the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s, they were doing just fine. In cultured, educated, forward-thinking, wonderful host nation Germany. They were doing just fine, at least in a physical way, but not in a spiritual manner. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu stepped in and turn the lights back on, and Klep Klal Yisrael going. And that, Hoidul Hashem Kiru Bishmai. That is the big, big principle of the Beis HaLevi, which, as we've mentioned, we've discussed this on many occasions. Rav Chaim Volozhin once said, if Klal Yisrael don't learn to make Kiddush, they're not Makadosh themselves, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make Havdalah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ensure that there is a separation. If they don't do it themselves, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have to teach them the hard way. So let's come back now to our Medrash. This is the principle of the Beis HaLevi, that the greatest chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do is that sometimes, on occasion, out of tragic necessity, Klal Yisrael are tortured and persecuted by the goyim, because ultimately that's their preservation. Ultimately that's what keeps them going, because if not, they'll just be absorbed, assimilated, and disappeared completely. What does the Medrash say in our parsha? The Medrash says that Klal Yisrael are comparable to the Zayis in three ways. Number one, just as the Zayis is beaten and crushed, so too are Klal Yisrael. Just as shemen doesn't mix with other liquids, so too Klal Yisrael do not mix with the goyim. Just as shemen rises to the top, so too Klal Yisrael rise to the top. All of those mushalim have one common theme. Klal Yisrael are supposed to be like shemen. They're not supposed to merge with other nations. Indeed, they're supposed to rise to the top. We're supposed to be the Sgula Mikol Ho'amim. We're not just another nation on the map. We are the Sgula Mikol Ho'amim. But on occasion, in order for that to happen, they have to be beaten. And they have to be crushed in order to ensure that indeed they don't mix with other liquids, in other words, with other nations. So therefore, all the Mishalim of the Medrash have this common theme. Yes, just as the Zayis is beaten and crushed, so too Klal Yisrael. Why? The answer is because that's the next Mishal. Do you know why they must be crushed? Because they have a role to fulfill. They have to be like oil, i.e. not to mix with the nations, not to be absorbed by the goyim. And if there is a danger, an imminent danger of that occurring, then indeed they have to be crushed by the goyim. There is no other way but the painful way to preserve Klal Yisrael. Ultimately, they will learn their lesson not to be too comfortable in amongst the goyim. We learnt it the hard way. We are choyze b'tshuva, and then we no longer mix with the goyim, and to the contrary, we rise to the surface. So for all the Mishalim and the Medrash have one theme. But I think it's worth adding that, interestingly enough, this Medrash, as we mentioned, is to be found in our parasha. What is this parasha discussing? The Menorah. Hadlokas HaMenorah. What does the idea that we've just mentioned have anything to do with the Menorah? Does it have anything to do with the Menorah? The fact that Klal Yisrael are not to be mixed with the Goyim, because they are the choice nation, they are the nation, the Am Hashem, the Sgula Mikol Ha'amim, has that got anything to do with the Menorah? And the answer is, it has everything to do with the Menorah. And this is also based on something we've discussed on many, many occasions. We've always mentioned the Medrash Tanchuma in Parashat Noach that says that whereas there are two parts to Torah, Torah Shebichtav and Torah Sheba'al Peh, but where is the Brit? Where is the covenant formed between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael? Torah Sheba'al Peh. Do you know why? Because Torah Sheba'al Peh is difficult. Torah Shebichtav is a small, finite book, easily read. Just have to read the words, that's all you have to do. But Torah Sheba'al Peh is difficult. You have to be Messiah yourself, said the Medrash. It's like Choshech, it's dark. Everybody knows, you learn a Gemara for the first time, it's a difficult subject. The beginning, the end, the Kasha, the Teretz, the Raya, the Havan, Maskana, the Rashi, the Tezer, it's difficult, difficult. But precisely because it's difficult, how do you know if you have a true relationship with somebody? If he's prepared to help you out, even when it's difficult, if he's prepared to be Moisa Nefesh for you, then you know there's a relationship. But if he's only there at your side when things are plain sailing and easy, not much of a relationship there. Perusha Bal Peh is difficult. It requires hard work and mysterious nefesh. That is where we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we've explained in the past that the Oroin in the Beis HaMikdosh, what did that contain? The Luchos. That's Perusha Bal Peh. The Menorah, with all of its intricacies and complexities, Kineir Mitzvah V'Torah Oir. The Menorah represented Perusha Bal Peh. When was it light? Me'erev Ad Boker. It was dark, and then it became light. Because when you learn Perusha Bal Peh, that's exactly what happens. It's difficult in the beginning, it's easier at the end. The Nesiv says that when Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to understand Teresh Baal Peh, he used to gaze at the light of the Menorah. Because the Teresh Baal Peh emanates from the Menorah. When Moshe Rabbeinu was up in Sinai, up in Shemayim, being taught Torah by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says there that how did he know when it was night and when it was day? Up in Shemayim. So the Medrash says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught him Teresh Baal Peh, he knew it was night time. Night is a period of darkness and difficulty. That's what Teresh Baal Peh is. That's the Menorah. That's the Menorah. It was written by Erev in the evening when it's dark. If the Medrash tells us that the Brit, our whole relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is based on Teresh Baal Peh, and that is what ultimately stands us apart from all other nations, then we understand very well why in the pasuk that discusses the Menorah, which represents Teresh Baal Peh, that is the place that the Medrash talks about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to mixing with the Goyim. If we get absorbed in the Goyim, then we're no longer a unique nation. We're just another nation. In fact, we're part and parcel of the nation that we get assimilated and absorbed into. So in this very pasuk that talks about the Menorah, that represents Teresh Baal Peh, this is the pasuk that tells us that you as a nation are unique. You have a bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that no other nation has. Asher bochar bonu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu esteh rasei. No other nation has this. We're the only nation. But specifically, where does that come about? Through Teresh Baal Peh, as represented and symbolized by the Menorah. So that's where the Medrash teaches us this lesson. That if you get too comfortable, and if you don't learn the lesson of the Menorah and of the Shemen, and you get absorbed with all other nations, then where's the Brit? In what way are you unique? In what way do you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You're just another nation. And if you don't realize that, then like the Zayis, you're going to have to be crushed until you do. Then this rude awakening, this difficult realization that no, you cannot cover up the Brit Milah like in Mitzrayim. And you cannot be absorbed and act similarly to other nations because you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They don't. Your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically comes about through Teresh Baal Peh. Therefore we understand on the one hand that all the Mesholim and the Medrash really have one common theme, but we understand at the same time why I think it's possible to suggest that this appears in the Pasuk that talks about the Menorah, because the Menorah represents Teresh Baal Peh, and with it our entire relationship, our unique Kesha, our Brit. The Chazal say in the Gemara in Gittin, Loi Koras HaKadosh Baruch Hu Brit in Klal Yisrael, Elo B'Teresh Baal Peh. The whole covenant that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is based on Teresh Baal Peh. That's what ultimately stands us apart from all other nations. This week was Zayin Adar. However, it was Zayin Adar Rishon. So it's a big discussion. Is it Moshe Rabbeinu's Yahrzeit, or is it not Moshe Rabbeinu's Yahrzeit? Big discussion, big halachic discussion, bechlal. What do you do with bar mitzvahs and Yahrzeit and birthdays and all other celebrations? I was just in England last week. My nephew was very put out. Because months and months and months ago, he drew a little circle around the date Zayin Adar of this week. That was his birthday. Until you were told last week, I'm sorry, there's no birthdays in Adar Aleph. So I'm afraid your birthday has been cancelled and pushed off for another month. So it was crossed out. Poor young boy, birthday delay. But there's a big halachic discussion about when do you commemorate yahrzeits and when do you have simchas and bar mitzvahs, etc., etc. But either way, just for a moment or two, to discuss a very, very fascinating subject with regard specifically to Moshe Rabbeinu and the demise and the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. There is a very, very strange phrase which I found appears in the Gemara in at least three places: the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Sukkah, and the Gemara in Beitza, where there were discussions then on different subjects, no relationship, no relevance to what we're talking about. And then the Gemara says, Omalei Rav Safra. It was always Rav Safra. Interestingly enough, it was Rav Safra in all three places. When he wants to say to his fellow Amoira that, yes, I agree with you, you have said the right thing, he says, Moshe, Shapir Ka'omrit. Moshe, you have said the right thing. His name wasn't Moshe. His name was Rav Acha, Rav Chia, Rav Shmuel, whoever it was. But he referred to him as Moshe. Why did Rav Safra refer to these Amoraim, as great as they were, by the name Moshe? So Rashi in Shabbos says, Moshe, Kloima, what this means to say is, Rabbeinu, Bedoiroi, our Rab, our Rebbe in his generation, is Kamoshe Bedoiroi. He's comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu in his generation. What does this mean? I saw this afternoon, there's a sefer called the Pnei David. The Pnei David is a pirush, the Torah written by the great Chidor. The great Chidor. And he writes there the following. Every Talmud Chacham, now this is slightly Kabbalistic, so I can't claim to understand it fully. He says every Talmud Chacham has in him an element of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yesh boi nitzvot. Nitzvot, literally translated, is a spark. He has that spark, he has an element of Moshe Rabbeinu in him. Says the Pnei David, says the Chidor, a phenomenal pshat in our pasuk. A Talmud Chacham has a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu. How does one ensure that one has bonim tamidei chachamim? So the Gemara says, harogil b'neir. If you like the neir, you'll have bonim tamidei chachamim. So he says, therefore, that when, in fact, you light the Neir, what are you in fact doing? You are bringing about the Zechus to have children who are Talmidei Chachamim, who have in them this spark of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says, that's how you can translate our pasuk. V'ata tetzave es basis es b'nei Yisrael. V'yikhu eilecha shemen zayis. They shall bring to you Shemen Zayis. Do you know what that means? When they light the menorah with Shemen Zayis, and then as a result of which they'll have Bonim Talmidei Chachamim, ultimately v'yikhu eilecha. They will be bringing themselves to you, because that way they connect themselves to you, because those Bonim Talmidei Chachamim have a piece, have a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu in them. A fascinating chat. Now I saw also in a tshuva by Reb Nosson Gishtetner, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim in Bnei Brak, who was nifter a few years ago, and he points out something very interesting. In all of Mishnahs and in all of Gemara, did you ever notice there was never a Tana or an Amora called Reb Moshe? Interesting observation. We have Rav Shmuel, and we have Rav, and we have Rav Tarfon, or Rav Kiva, and Rav Gamliel, and Rav Yaisi. Why was no Tana called Rav Moshe? Good name to have. So he explains there in the most phenomenal way. He says, a name is always what stands you apart from everybody else. This is my unique description. But by describing a Tana on Amora as Moshe, that's not his unique description, because everybody has a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu in them. So really, you're called Moshe? Everybody's called Moshe. Because everybody has that element of Moshe Rabbeinu in him. a name is, in what way am I unique? I'm called Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Yoisli, Rabbi Akiva. That's how I'm unique. Call me Rabbi Moshe. You're also called Rabbi Moshe. And so is he, and so is he, and so is every other Tana. Because we all have that element of Moshe Rabbeinu in us, in that Tana Chacham. Now, I saw the most fascinating thing. There is a sefer, very famous sefer, called Ya'aretz Devash. Ya'aretz Devash was written by the great Rav Yonasan Eberschitz 250 years ago. And he has droshes. These are the droshes that he delivered in his Kehillah. If you read the introduction to Ya'aretz Devash, it says they used to give droshes which were 6 or 7 hours long. I won't keep you long, we're almost done. I'm only quoting a short excerpt of one of his very, very lengthy droshes. In a drosha there that was delivered in Tof Kuf Hey. Tof Kuf Hey, which is what? 1745, and it was delivered on Zayin Adar. And the drosha is in fact a hesped. He's giving a hesped for one of the Gedolei Hador, and it brings the details of this Gedolei Hador, not our subject for the moment. He quotes a Gemara, and he quotes a Zohar, which says three words. Moshe loy meis. Moshe Rabbeinu never dies. Never died. So he explains, what does that mean that he never died? What it means is, because Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, physically he did die. But his spirit, as it were, lives on and on and on, because he is continuously connected to every Talmud Chacham and every Lo Yimeis Torah. And in that respect, he never dies. Not only is he connected, says the Ya'aretz Devash, but all of our Chochma, all of our Havana in Torah comes from that eternal influence of Moshe Rabbeinu and that presence that is still with us until today. That's what he says. So his neshama, again, I'm just repeating the words, I can't claim to have a full understanding of this. His neshama, says Rabbi Yonasan, still remains with us down here. It didn't, as it were, fly up to the Shomayim. In a physical way, of course, his guf left and he was buried. When the Pasuk says in the Zayta Brocha, V'lo yoda ish es kvurose, nobody knows his burial place. Says Rabbi Yonasan, do you know what that means? Because his burial place is really with us. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu is. If you want to know, where is Moshe Rabbeinu? He's inside of all of us. Anybody who's Loimei's Torah has a piece, an element, a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu within him. So he says the most incredible thing. Imagine you are writing a hesped for Moshe Rabbeinu. The impossible task. For the Torah does so. The Torah of the Zayta Bracha says, Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, Loikohato Einoi. His eye never dimmed in any way. That's the Hesped. That's the Hesped for Moshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't say that he produced Kriyas Yamsuf and he took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and he spoke to Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he gave us the Torah. His eyes never dimmed. He had good eyesight at the end of his life. That's what the Torah is giving a hesped for Moshe Rabbeinu, that his eyesight was good. Furthermore, how does that pasuk continue? It says, and Klal Yisrael cried following the death of Moshe Rabbeinu for how long? 30 days. 30 days, we would think, is a long time. It's not such a long time. The Gemara, in fact, tells us in Kesubos that when Rabbeinu HaKodesh, the Yehuda Anasi, one who edited all the Mishnayos, when he passed away, there were 12 months of Hespedim. So, make the calculation yourself. If Rabbeinu HaKadosh gets 12 months, shouldn't Moshe Rabbeinu have had 8 years and years? 30 days. 30 days of crying. Those are the two questions that Rabbi Yonasan asked. What is this Hesped that his eyes never dimmed, and why was there only crying for 30 days? So he says, again, in a very deep way, but let's at least try and understand a little bit. He says, when one gives a hesped over the demise of a tzaddik, one is assisting his neshama to be oiler and to send it to its rightful place in Shomayim. with Moshe Rabbeinu, that was unnecessary, because the neshama never returned up to Shemayim. It remained here with each and every one of us. So 30 days was enough to cry over the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, in a physical sense, no longer existed. But after that, there was no more sending the neshama to Shemayim. Moshe Rabbeinu's neshama lived on. He is the one, in the words of Rabbi Yonatan, his hashkocha, his protection for Klal Yisrael. He looks after Klal Yisrael. He sends us a shefa of Torah, and that's what it means, loikohas or enoi. His eye never dimmed. Doesn't mean he had good eyesight. What does it mean his eye was strong? The eye is always the symbol of hashkoch. When it says, with regard to Eretz Yisrael, there's a special hashkoch in this country. It says, Einei Hashem. The eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are always on this country. Moshe Rabbeinu is there protecting Klal Yisrael. That's what it means, his eyes never dimmed. It doesn't mean he didn't need glasses. It means his eye never dimmed, his ayin lives on. The ayin of Moshe Rabbeinu lives on and on and on. How so? Through his Torah, which exists in the spark that occurs in every single Lamed Torah. He says, in conclusion, well, this will finish. We all know, famous Gemara, Haman HaRasha produces the Goyro. And he's thrilled when it comes out to Chodesh Adar. Oh, wonderful, Chodesh Adar. That's a bad omen for Klal Yisrael because Moshe Rabbeinu died. Says the Gemara, famously, Haman made a terrible mistake because he never realized that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Adar as well. Famous Gemara. Says Rabbi Yonatan, one second, this Gemara doesn't make sense. Which happened first? Was he first born or he first died? He was first born. So firstly, if you look in the Gemara switches the order. The Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar, he was born in Adar. That's the wrong order. He was born in Adar, and then 120 years later he died. Why is his death mentioned first? Secondly, it's not just a question of what's mentioned. Whatever happened last, L'chayra is the most significant. What's the halacha? Somebody passes away, the yahrzeit is commemorated. So we say the yahrzeit is a sad day, there's bad mazel, some have the meaning to fast on the yahrzeit. What happens if that happens to be the deceased person's birthday as well? Then you don't fast on the yahrzeit? Of course you do. Because initially that day was a good omen because he was born. But it eventually transpires that day is a bad omen because he passed away. So whatever happens last completely eclipses anything that preceded it. So what does that mean? That Haman didn't realize that what? That it's true that Moshe Rabbeinu died, he was also born. But that happened long before his death. Once he died on that day, L'chaira Haman HaRasha was right. This is a bad omen for Klal Yisrael. Says Rabbi Yonatan from Abishit, the most incredible pshat. Because Moshe Rabbeinu lived in this world, it's true. And then he died. In a physical sense, he died. As soon as he died, Moshe Rabbeinu became born in the hearts and the neshamos of every member of Klal Yisrael. He first died and was then born. Not in a physical way. Physically, he was born 120 years prior to his death. Therefore, the order of the Gemara is right. Haman HaRasha didn't realize that it's true Moshe Rabbeinu died. But as soon as he died, what happened? He didn't disappear. Lo yimis Moshe. He was reborn. All that Torah was transmitted to Yeshua. Yeshua onwards, to the next Torah. In fact, every member of Klal Yisrael can be referred to as Moshe because they have that spark in them. So it's true, whatever happens last does eclipse anything that happens prior to it. What happened over here last? It wasn't the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, that was Haman's mistake. Haman didn't realize, he thought, Adar, oh, tremendous bad mazel for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu died, so there's bad mazel, there's no hashkocha for Klal Yisrael, it's a bad omen for them. He didn't realize, says the Gemara, he died. That's what happened first. that he was also born. When? On Zayin Adar. Which Zayin Adar? The very same day he died. In fact, the same minute. In fact, the same second. At that very moment that he died in a physical way, he was reborn in every member of Klal Yisrael. So there is the tremendous Loikoh Asar Enoi. His Hashkoch is still with us. You're claiming that this is bad omen. This is the time to go and try and kill Klal Yisrael. To the contrary, this is the day that we have an ultimate protection of Klal Yisrael. Loikoh Asar Enoi. The Hashkoch, the spirit of Moshe Rabbeinu, lives on. And that's why he says the Gemara's order is indeed correct. First, Moshe Rabbeinu died on Zayin Adar, but at that precise moment, he was reborn in the hearts of every single person. So when, the very famous Rambam said, every member of Klal Yisrael can be Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not just figurative. We have that element of Moshe Rabbeinu in us, such that, as we read before, Rav Safra referred to other Amoraim as Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why there's no Tanoim and no Amoraim called Moshe Rabbeinu, because they're all called Moshe Rabbeinu. If you want to call one of them Moshe Rabbeinu, you can call absolutely everybody Moshe Rabbeinu. But this is the Yesod of Rabbi Yonatan Eberschitz, and that's what it means, Moshe Rabbeinu Loimet.